This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to a Green and White special brought to you by Argyle Life and One Team in Devon, the weekly Argyle newsletter and fanzine. As you might have gathered, I'm not Aaron or Joe. Instead, I'm James, the voice behind One Team in Devon. And in this special podcast edition, we're here to talk through our latest newsletter, a review of the stats from the first half of the season, and a look at the challenges facing new head coach Ian Foster. Tonight, I have with me a statistical symposium of faces, both new and old. First up, we have Alberto Lauchello, co-author and the brains behind the stats of this piece. Alberto is an Argyle fan and football data analyst consultant at Eurosport Italy. Welcome, Alberto.
Hello, everyone. It's nice to meet you, and it's a pleasure to be hosted in this podcast.
Next up, Argyle Life's Data Don and X.com's Not a Troll Ben. How are you?
Hello. I don't like to be called a Data Don with Alberto on the screen with me, but yeah, I suppose we'll get to learn from an expert today.
And finally, the Neville and Carragher of Argyle Life rolled into one. Adam Price, how are you enjoying Fosball?
Wow, yeah, I'll take that as a compliment. Hey, Fosball, it's unbeaten, isn't it? So I'm sure the guys on the other podcast have covered it in great depth. So let's just say we're very happy not to have lost yet.
First up, Alberto, thank you for your time in putting these amazing stats together. There's a link to the piece in the description of the podcast, and if you're watching on YouTube, apologies in advance, but there's a link in there as well. Alberto, can you tell us how you became an Argyle fan?
Sure. So I try to be quick. I came in Plymouth the first time in 2010 during the summer to study English. It was not the first time that I came in England to do that, but it was the first time that I spent the whole summer there. And simply put, I had a great time meeting new people. I had a great host family, Pamela Russell and David Russell, that they hosted me in Plimstock, which to whom I say hi. And I was already a football fan. I grew up in a family where my father made me support Juventus, but I didn't really have a reason to do that. So I started questioning why was I supporting Juventus? And I was in a new city. I felt at home. Actually, my favorite color is green. So, you know, it was like a complete match for me. And I tried the experience of the English football, because I think it's it's not just about the sport itself, but it's a whole environment completely different from the Italian one. Like you have like a proper day of football. It's almost like a religion in your country. Fell in love with it, fell in love with the club. I'm not one who jumped on the bandwagon because it was the year of the financial problems. So I've been supporting since then, since the relegations, and it was not easy at first, but then I saw a club rising and doing better and better, and here I am.
And what was your favorite pasty?
My favorite pasty in Plymouth. So, there was this place in the city center called Ivor Dudney, something like that.
Good memory.
Which wasn't bad, I remember, if you wanted to go like for a cheap one. Or there was also another in the Barbican, was very good. I don't remember the name, something JACKA, something like that. Bakery in the Barbican, very nice as well. Yeah, that's all I remember.
You won me over at Ivor Dudney, and we can catch up on Plimpstock, growing up in Plimpstock offline. And just what led you to what you do at Eurosport, and just tell us a bit about what you what that's like to do what you do for football data analyst.
Okay. It all started quite randomly. I mean, I did a course in order to be a recognized football data analyst. But then I just started publishing on Twitter, and from there I've been noticed by the head of by the responsible for the news on the website of Eurosport Italy, and he contacted me and he suggested that we did this reserved piece on their website, where while I once every 2 weeks would provide them with statistical analysis with basically consultancies regarding data applied to football, because let's say that the average journalist doesn't really know maybe how to properly handle data. And that was an interesting experiment. We've been working together the whole past season, and we are both satisfied. It had quite some success, and That's basically what I did.
Well, I see you taking plenty of people to task on Twitter about their use of stats and not extrapolating the numbers properly. So, look, we'll go into the meat of the newsletter now. The newsletter's broken up into four parts. We've got Argo in attack, Argo in defence, Finn Azaz, his impact and the impact his departure could have on Ian Foster. And then finally, we've got Argyle's chances of staying up. So let's start with the attack. Now you need to go, hopefully people will go into this piece and read in detail. We're not gonna bombard every piece of data in there. Also it'd be a pretty heavy listen, but look, we all know Argyle great in attack. And as Alberto points out, we're currently seventh for open play XG. So that's obviously discounting set pieces, and third in the league for goals. So, and that's at the time of writing, which is the turn of the season. So, Alberto, are these the numbers you were expecting to see? And for a team that's, to be fair, in the relegation scrap, how unusual would you say it is to see this level of attacking prowess?
Well, I was surprised, of course, because there were all the struggles of being a team that was just promoted from League One. I think that if from League Two to League One, there's not such a big step, but maybe from League One to the Championship, the step is a little bit bigger, to get to the level of there are teams that last year were playing in the Premier League, so it's very difficult to adapt and. I was also curious because Schumacher has always played a kind of an attacking football and a dominant way of playing, which is very rare for a team that is newly promoted in the Championship to adapt, to try to avoid relegation. It's a very risky approach. In the past, although the data available are not a lot to depict a, let's say, strong trend. But in the past, rarely teams adopted an approach with so much offensive production while conceding this much, because, of course, there's the the ups and downs of this approach of football. So yeah, very surprised. You said it, seventh for open play, expected goals, third for open play goals. Those are numbers that don't come in easily for a newly promoted team. We are very good at shooting on target, something again surprising and possibly not so sure it's going to be sustainable throughout the whole season. But as long as we have it, I'm not going to complain about that. I think there are spots where we could do better offensive wise, because we are not exploiting the aerial game at all. Also because we didn't have the players to do that. Now we had a couple of additions that for sure are, let's say, prone to that kind of game. But yeah, so it's a very good start of the season offensive wise. It could be improved, but it's very good and surprising, of course.
We'll come on to some of those other aspects now. Quickly, Adam, we're going to dive a bit deeper into Azaz, but you know, how much do you feel we've lost in terms of our XG and our attacking output just with one player being recalled?
I mean, it's unavoidable to think that we're going to take a pretty serious hit. I think from a lot of the stats that I've seen and were presented in the article there, it's clear just how many of our attacking moves feature Azaz, be it at the end of the move he scores goals, be it in the build, let's say, with a key pass, or simply being involved in the move. You know, usually you look in the Championship and you've got players who are creators or they score. I think maybe it's off the top of my head, just players at Leeds and Leicester that are the only ones who have had as many key passes on Azaz whilst scoring as many. It's, you know, he stands out quite alarmingly in that sense. And so it's undoubtedly gonna give us a hit. How much that will be and how we go to replace that, I won't tread on any toes, but I know that's something that we want to touch on a little bit later on. But yeah, it's gonna reshape the attack. It's very difficult to improve on that attack as it is, let alone when you take out one of the key creators in it. So I think the way that we're going to have to approach it is, not necessarily take it on the chin and accept, okay, we're going to be well. It's going to have to be a different approach. We can't keep up the style of play as we would if Azaz was there, because we just do not have that creative talent at the moment. And getting that other creative talent in is... well, it's a lot easier said than done. Let's put it that way. So is our XG going to take a hit? Almost certainly. The extent of that, I mean, I guess that's the million-dollar question. That's going to be the difference, ultimately. If we're able to mitigate that, we've got that gap to the relegation zone where I'm confident that we should be okay if we can. If we can't mitigate it, yeah, let's see.
One of the stats that stands out, as Alberto just touched on, is that we shoot from distance. We're the third best team for shots outside the penalty box. 44% of our shots come from outside, with an average of 18.2 yards. We're the second best percentage in the league of shots on target. I know, Ben, that you've banged this drum a lot in the last few months about people who talk down our offensive capabilities, our strikers, the need to get more in. I take it obviously that doesn't surprise you. Do you think it's sustainable looking at these numbers?
Well, as Alberto suggested, you know, I went on the rant on the pod after Ipswich and suggested that we can't keep this level of accuracy. However, we've dropped just, I think, about 0.4% of our shots on target. It went from just over 40% down to, actually, it might be a bit more than that. It might have been around 43% shots on target. And now it's in the high 39%. We're still only the second, though, in the league for percentage of shots on target. So we've been able to maintain a pretty high accuracy for our shots, our shooting. So as I posited a few pods ago, potentially that's because our players are just that good. Players are hitting the target, and they will do that, you know, frequently. But if you look at the players who are perhaps contributing the most in terms of goals, players like Whittaker and Azaz, they're actually not among the most accurate players we've got. They're outperforming their XG better than anybody else, Whittaker particularly, but Azaz is sort of performing 150% of his XG as well, or was, obviously no longer here. But in terms of their shots on target percentage, they're towards the bottom. Of course, the greater sample size you have, then of course you're going to regress to a mean of, you know, Dan Skarr's had 4 shots and sort of scored 1 or 2. So, you know, that's going to skew it, but of course you're going to regress towards a mean in that sense. But overall as a team, we're still at it. So you're now past the midway point of the season and we're still hitting this accuracy percentage. It might well continue. If we are going to regress to a mean, it's going to be a worry because that will be a drastic drop off if we are to sort of regress, and that's going to cause problems. But we're also the second in the for shots on target in total. So even without the even if we have a regression, we can drop down to say 6th or something overall in terms of shots on target and also our shots on target accuracy, and still have a comparably excellent output that's still in a sort of playoff caliber production. So the worry is going to be, as Adam suggested, Azaz is key in all areas of the build up, and that is, you know, as was demonstrated, I think slightly, although we're changing the attacking build up, you know, Azaz was, hang on, we've got the, so in terms of progressive carries, Azaz is 3rd in the team per 90 behind Miller, Whittaker and Mumba. In terms of progressive passes per 90, Azaz is clear at the top, and that's going to be the biggest loss, clearly, his ability to sort of turn under pressure and play the best pass. But he's top with 7.35 progressive passes per game. And interestingly, 2nd, and again, a small sample size, but 2nd in that list is Giabi, who had 5 progressive passes in his 1 game, which is an interesting, although his passing accuracy is miles below Azaz, although Azaz's passing accuracy, interestingly, is about middling for the team. His progressive passes, he had 5 progressive passes against Huddersfield. Now, of course, that's an incredibly limited sample size. You're playing against Huddersfield, who are playing a low 3-5-2. So whether that, again, is sustainable. But that's an interesting skill of his that's been brought in. And again, he's 3rd for progressive receptions, as in receiving the, you know, the progressive pass has been played and he's taken the ball in. So he's 4th, 1st and 3rd in terms of getting the ball up the pitch, whether that's carrying it, passing it or receiving it. And, you know, there's no one else who he sort of fits. Even Morgan Whittaker doesn't, you know, his progressive passes are right down the bottom because he does receive, and he's our 2nd carrier behind Miller, and he's the 1st in terms of progressive receptions. But he doesn't get involved in the build-up play. Azaz is that Swiss Army knife who's able to do all of that. So whether we're going to get the opportunities to put those shots on target is the question. If we can maintain the accuracy is one thing, but you need to be able to put the volume of efforts on target before you start worrying about how accurate they are, I think. Because you regress to a mean. And the lower your, you can rely on Whittaker to score far above his XG, but if he's only getting a few shots per game, his accuracy, let me see what his shots on target accuracy is, 37.6% of his shots. So even if he's scoring sort of basically 2 goals for every 1 he ought, if he's only getting 3 shots per game, you're only going to get 1 of those on target, and then yeah, you've maybe got a good chance. So we need to find a way of keeping the volume of shots up. I think that's slightly more important than whether we can continue with the quality of our accuracy. We need, if we're going to continue to have an attacking output, I think it's the volume we need to sort of be producing rather than the accuracy, because with volume will come, especially if you're working good chances rather than just taking long shots and relying on Whittaker's skills. if you're creating good chances, that they're going to be higher XG opportunities, and therefore you should be able to put them away if you're creating enough opportunities.
Well, look, we've got two stats here, and I feel like this is a good time to bring them up because they may talk to what you were just alluding to. And that is Argyle 23rd out of the 24 for aerial duels, 45.7% won, which surprised me. And then just to wrap another one in, two for the price of one, bottom of the league for crosses attempted and 23rd out of 24 for accurate crosses. We look at the Huddersfield game and the signings. We've got two giants signed, and our only goal in the Huddersfield game came from a cross from Mumba into Whittaker. So is that already two slightly separate data points there? But Adam, do you think that's already a sign of where Foster's looking at this data and seeing we need to be better in the air and we need to get crosses into the box?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if not, in truth. I think that the aerial point is the obvious one. You see that we're 23rd in terms of our aerial dual success percentage, and you know, that's a very obvious thing you can very quickly look at for improvement. I think when we look at that number, you have to consider the style as well as the number itself, i.e. are we actively wanting to participate in aerial duels across the pitch? Probably not, in truth, or at least we weren't under Schumacher. It was very much, and if you're going to go long, get it into the channel, and please don't put it on Ben Wayne's head when he's got a 6'9" centre-back to deal with. But I think looking at the signings brought in, it's the natural conclusion, isn't it? That they're both 6'5", they've both clearly got a physical presence, and you'd expect them to win more. Though I was interested to see that when he was in the Championship, I think I saw that Phillips won fewer aerial duels than he lost when he was at the time of Blackburn. Again, that's a pretty small sample size. But in that case, maybe his height isn't everything. Maybe we're looking at his technique, his jumping reach. And, you know, look, he was 17 when that happened. There's plenty of time to improve. But, yeah, there's clearly a lot of aspects to what we're going to do and what we have done in this transfer window. And there certainly needs to be more of it on account of the fact that we've lost six players so far and brought in just two. It wouldn't surprise me if the players we bring in then are of a similar mould who can give us that, let's call it, plan B of winning those aerial duels, if you want. Because, you know, as it is, we had a very low cross success rate under Schumacher. We also barely attempted any. And I think that's symptomatic of the fact that, well, our plan was, and by all accounts, you know, it because we were overperforming, it was a successful one in many ways. Our plan seemed to be get the ball into an area and hit it. Let's not try and worry about getting it to a wing back or a winger and crossing it in to whichever man might be in the area. It's very much a case, particularly with Whittaker, I think it's very clear that he wants to shoot whenever he shot more than anyone in this league and by quite a fair margin. So now we may, or well, hopefully, we may have a few different options along with Phillips and JB that come in. As this window goes on, it gives us that other option that that perhaps Sam Cosgrove gave us last season, or perhaps in that. I'm not suggesting, you know, we need to go completely the other way and everyone needs to be nearly 7 foot tall, but something of a balance, I think, is something that we can find, particularly as we've been saying, now that Azaz is gone and now that we're looking to mitigate his departure, perhaps add more strings to our bow. Yeah, it certainly looks to me that was at least something that Foster's been thinking about. And because, as I think we've all said, that stat and how bad we are sticks out like a sore thumb, right, with our aerial duels. I mean, you're looking at it and it's, I'm going to find it now, who's the only one below us, Southampton, have attempted the fewest. And their success rate is actually more than acceptable compared to what we're offering there. So, you know, there's something to think about, and clearly Foster is.
Well, there was no real surprise other than I thought the lack of aerial ability from the attacking stats. So we'll move on to defence, and not a great selection of stats here either. I'll just give you the headline figures that Argyle have the second highest open play XGA, expected goals against. And on average, we concede the third most dangerous chances in the league and worryingly from the closest range. So we concede chances on average to 16 yards out. So we're facing more dangerous shots from across the range than pretty much anyone in the league. Obviously, thank you. Everyone should go and have a look at the piece, because not only does Alberto dig out these stats, but he also produces these wonderful charts that bring them to life. So difficult for us to do on the pod. So please go and have a look at those. But, you know, just to bring these into context, Alberto, I mean, how, you know, not just in league terms, as we're bottom of the league for these, but I mean, you know, can you articulate how bad we are performing in defence?
Well, that's the main problem that Argyle have shown this season. The fact is, Schumacher decided to approach the defensive phase with a low block, basically, because the players have not been pressing high. We have the fifth highest PPDA, which basically the higher it is, the lower the pressing intensity is. So. We are not a team like Liverpool who do gegenpress, and we don't do it particularly well. There's nothing wrong about that. It's an approach that you can have. For example, Juventus have, and they are doing great in Italy. The difference is that Juventus, for instance, has a great low block efficiency. In the sense that its defense can stand and can keep the attackers outside of the penalty box. Instead, Argyle defense act like a butter when encounters a hot knife. It's easily cut through. If I remember correctly. We concede the most through balls. A through ball is a passage that can skip a defensive line, basically, so create a clear advantage for the opponent. And if you count the touches of the opponent in our penalty box on the total of their touches in the final third, you can see that we have the second worst low block efficiency. That's a problem to address because it doesn't regard something like, for example, aerial duels. It's not something like we cannot deal with because we don't have tall players. It's something that we should be able to cover the line of passes. Especially, we are quite weak in tackling. We do not tackle a lot. It's like we wait. We maybe try to concede the weak foot to the opponent. But this particularly works with weaker opponents when you start having the likes of Jorginho Rutter or Somerville that you're facing, just to quote a couple of players. Then it starts to become, or even if we were to face, for example, an hypothetical Morgan Whittaker, that's where the difficulties come in. And I think that's a real problem. We are 19th for tackles won per opponent touches. I say per opponent touches because whenever you talk about defensive stats, you need to normalize them. For example, Plymouth will face a lot more defensive actions, will be into more much more defensive action than Leicester, for instance. So that's why you need to normalize on, for example, the numbers of opponent touches. So we are 19th in the league for that, and that's quite remarkable. The only good thing I would stress of our defense is that we've been pretty good at blocking shots since we have the second highest percentage in the league. It's not really, let's say, the defense of the mobile players, but let's praise our keepers, who have been both, and I stress both, playing very well in terms of preventing goals from saves. This maybe you will see in the next piece if we are still gonna collaborate on these pieces with James. Both Hazard and Cooper have been great at that, and have been also good at cross-claiming, which is another help, let's say, that we have provided to our so far poor defense. I'm not talking in for singular players. I mean, Gibson has been a very good addition for this year. Julio Pleguezuelo, I think he could do more. I think much more was expected from him when he first came, but he has to adapt to a new league, so I can understand that. Scar, again, could have been better. He hasn't been at his top level, but still his stats are not too bad. And now we have an addition that seemed promising in the first. Of course, it's just one match, so we cannot say a lot about that. But he won the Man of the Match award, so he dealt great with the opponents. So yeah, that's basically what I would stress.
I mean, again, I'm at pains to stress, could please go and have a look at these visualizations and graphs that Alberto's produced, but the low block efficiency graph is so bad, it's actually had to extend the axis out to fit the Argyle badge onto it. And that is a measure of inefficient low block and allowing more through balls. So if you do go through those, that's quite something to behold. And as Alberto just pointed out, we are looking at doing another part of this very, very soon, maybe next week with some player heads-to-heads. So we've got those in the bank ready to go. But as Alberto pointed out, the gegenpressing stats came out so low that we effectively don't do it. And as Alberto pointed out, when we do try it, it doesn't come off at all. You know, Adam, Alberto sort of covered this off, but is that Schumacher style, or is it a sort of a damning indictment of the setup that we do try and low block, which is not very good at that either?
Yeah, it's possibly both. I think when we came into the championship, it's a very clear choice by Schumacher, and I think it's reflected actually by the formation and adding a body to the midfield, in that we wanted to retain our shape. We didn't want to go and press and try to win the ball off the opposition quickly, simply because when our players find themselves out of position against the likes of Leicester, Leeds United, those teams at the top, they will be punished for it one-on-one. It's just the reality. So I can understand the reasons behind it. I think, as you said, Alberto, there's nothing wrong with it per se, playing it like this. You know, it's a stylistic choice and it can be made to work. You've just got to make it work. And so far, you know, bluntly, we haven't. I think, you know, you look at the way that we tackle, even if you do something very basic, looking at number of time tackles made and number of times dribbles passed, you know, if you use that as your impression of tackle success, we are the worst team at the league at tackling. And that's something that, style or not, you should be able to improve upon, you should be able to look at. And I think, to be honest, and I don't know as much about Ian Foster as I'd like, but from what I've heard, I am encouraged, because to my eye and to what I've seen, he's a lot, he has a lot of a mind. I'm trying to put these words in the right order, which I appreciate is not great for a podcast, but he's minded to look at the game out of possession as well as in possession. I think when you look at Schumacher's style, many a game, you know, we were a joy to watch when we had the ball. I think we can all accept that. Look at that, the six goals we put past Norwich as an example. But yeah, the tackling, the pressing, style or not, has not been good enough. So I'm quietly optimistic that that's something that Foster's looking at. And hey, we know he impressed the Argyle senior leadership team at interview, right? It would not surprise me at all if he made that one of his core points, saying, look how bad we've been out of possession. I think I'm the man to fix it. And well, he gets himself the job. So yeah, I think part of Schumacher's style does come into that. But I think regardless of style, you need to be better when you do eventually put in a tackle than we have been. And I'm hoping Foster's coaching methods will see us be better. And yeah, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, of course. And his first was entrance to the England pathway, as they call it, was an out of possession coach, wasn't he? Specifically, under Cooper. So with every chance that he can make a big impression onto these this aspect of the Argyle setup, because if you look at the stats in this manner, then whichever way you look at it, it's as you say, it's not good enough. In terms of pressing in particular, Ben, do we see a big chasm between a Schumacher brand of football and a Foster brand of football? And how much did you spot any change between those two styles and brands within the very limited sample size of the one Huddersfield game so far?
I think there was definitely some noticeable changes. It's funny because I don't really watch any age group football particularly, but by some fluke, I don't know if it was lockdown or what, but I actually watched Foster's the under 19 Euros in 2022. I can't remember what the circumstances was, but I actually remember watching those games and being quite impressed. They'd beaten Israel in the group stages and then beaten them again in the final when Israel sort of shocked France in the semis. And I seem to remember that they were very good defensively. They didn't concede much at all. They were sometimes, I want to say, boring, but they were very measured and considered in their build-up play. They passed the ball side to side. They had the three centre-backs. And this is, of course, assuming that this is the same style and formation he wants to implement. He might well look at the personnel he has here at Argyle and say they're not adept at setting up that way. I'm going to need to change. If he's flexible, he might want to change things. But assuming that 3-4-3 that he used in the Euros is sort of like his at the base of his philosophy. They had the three centre backs who would form us almost like a triangle themselves, potentially using at times using the goalkeeper, but the wing backs would basically go up and down and go very wide in attack. They would essentially match up against the back line of the opponents, but in build up they would drop deep in and out of the midfield when necessary, and it would be quite a patient build up until they'd got someone out of position. They'd you know, frustrated the team, committed someone and won the overlap, created the overlap, and then they would spring very, very quickly. Then they could be very dynamic, and they were very much about getting the ball into the box, as we've talked about the different types of players that have been brought in, big guys who can muscle people and can be combative in the box, both defensively but also offensively, especially JB. You know, Phillips being a defender doesn't quite fit that bill, but he's very able on the ball. I think he had a very high pass completion rate against Huddersfield. And as Adam sort of suggested, his aerial dominance, which you might assume given his size, isn't necessarily there yet, but he is very comfortable with the ball at his feet. And that's definitely the style that team played in build-up. But defensively, they were absolutely cutthroat in their pressing. They were very they're getting the ball back incredibly quickly. That was the most exciting part of watching that England team play, was the way that they would force players into decisions or into to give them only one option and then pounce on the pass. You know, you'd force the wing back or the fullback inside when he was in possession, cut off the line. The wing backs would go cut off the line, so you couldn't play the ball down the line. They'd have to come inside, and then everyone would compress the space and only leave the one option and win the ball back very quickly. And you could see, I think you could definitely see, especially with JB, that he was a bit rusty. Obviously, he hasn't played, and you can't blame him for being, but there was definitely the kind of trigger almost that he was the one to go. He'd been told when, and it didn't always come off. He was sometimes late to the ball and would sort of kick the guy in the back of the calf or the ankle, but the guy would get his pass off or play the 1-2 and was sort of round him at times. And maybe the rest of the team weren't also au fait with when JB was going, what they had to do. I think, you know, after 1 week on the training ground, there's obviously a lot more room for improvement, but you could definitely see that there was an attempt at a higher press. And they obviously had been told that certain things were to happen. That was the trigger. And it didn't necessarily come off, especially in the second half. I think our shape and Huddersfield's changes, we didn't quite know how to deal with those. And we sort of changed shape to try and provide some more to put someone slightly higher up the pitch, I think, to sort of be able to get closer and begin that press, but it wasn't effective. And once that person's out of the game, once that person's been played past, you then can't press because you're outnumbered. You've lost the numerical advantage, as it were. So I think that there was definitely signs that there's going to be a much more aggressive intent amongst the defending from the front. I don't know how much difference there was. I wasn't paying a great deal of attention because I was getting a bit nervous, to be honest. But I wasn't quite sure how big a difference there was in the, allowing through balls, allowing balls into the box, and how good we were at cutting that out. I'd like to see the stats on that, or maybe even watch back the full match replay and just sort of see how differently we dealt with the play, because they did get out from the back. It wasn't like we stifled them and really kept them in. Again, we're assuming that this is going to be the style he's going to try and implement, and that that's what they were trying to do against Huddersfield. Whereas it seemed, to be honest, in the second half, they decided, look, don't play any stupid balls. Safety first, get rid of the ball. Let's get away with a point, maybe at the expense of sort of tactical, the implementation of sort of like the game plan or the tactics that he's trying to instill in the team. So it's very difficult to draw any distinct conclusions from one game when it was about, that was more about not allowing Huddersfield to close the gap on us in the table as much as sort of being able to express the principles that the coach has put in the team. But I definitely, from that under-19s team, the defence is very much starts at the top of the pitch and is very dynamic. So it's going to be interesting to see which players in the team he sees as being able to affect that style, because I can't see too many that have got that dynamism to be able to carry the ball effectively, to be able to pass and move, as well as to be able to press effectively. So that might be where the spaces in the loan market are going to be coming useful, and whether it would be interesting to see which players in the squad will be able to adapt to that philosophy. But there's certainly those who have the physical traits to be able to do it. It's whether they're able to quickly take on board the be aware of and play with everyone else, because it is a very much everyone needs to be on the same page for that philosophy to work. So players like Callum Wright, etc., have the physicality, that the attributes, they're strong, they're fast, but will they be switched on enough to sort of recognize their role in it? There's potential there for it to be quite successful with Argyle, but time will tell, I guess. And again, I'm saying all this on the assumption that 3-4-3 and the same sort of high press and slow patient build up is going to be what he's going to try and implement, when he may well try something else.
Adam, just quickly on that, and to cap off this part of the pod, just quickly, any of the stats we've been through so far, is there anything in the first Foster 90 minutes that jumped out to be him rectifying some of these shortcomings?
I think perhaps if you just look at with regards to the XG in that game, if you are to look at the combined XG of each team and look at a game in the season, it's the only game to have produced fewer chances this season that Argyle have been involved in was West Bromwich Albion away, the 0-0 draw. Every other game, you'd expect to see plenty more. And then this one, we're coming to the end of the game where neither side has quite reached one XG. So perhaps looking at that is an indication that looking towards being very solid is something that we're going to look forward to. And I think, to go on what Ben said there, it could, if you're being harsh, be described as boring at times. It can be, don't get me wrong. I did not find that second half particularly exciting. I was, a nervous wreck, to be honest with you. But in the end, we got ourselves a point and didn't really concede any clear-cut chances away from home in the Championship. So I think that's something to look at. If you're looking at Stephen Schumacher managing that game, then I get the impression that we would have at least one XG for, but we'd certainly have it against as well. So that's something I'd look at. I wouldn't, I'm going to use the same line that we all have. It's one game. We can't be sure that's going to extrapolate over the season. We might see plenty more or many things different when Cardiff arrive at the weekend. But looking at that in isolation, it certainly caught my eye that that's very, very different to what we're used to seeing.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, and Foster was pains to sort of talk about us being more solid away. So that may be at the start of a change between a home style and an away style. We'll have to see. Alberto?
Yeah, James, if I may add, this is the data analyst in me that would like to stress a very important thing. Let us all remember that one game is nothing, literally, from the statistical point of view. I mean, in one game, there are multiple games, okay? For example, in the game we've seen, last one, against Huddersfield, even just for the fact that we scored quite early, that changes completely the approach, okay? So you have already a squad before scoring the game, and then you have another approach after, when you are leading, and then another one when you're drawing again later on. So we do need to wait to have a better idea of that. And also for the fact regarding the XG, no? If you remember from last season, we kept hearing mornings about how lucky was Argyle because we weren't we didn't have the best XG and so on. So first of all, expected goals are quite more complicated than that. It's not just data that you add to each other in order to have a big sum, and then you can. It's not the proper way to use it. But other than that, I don't want to get too boring about it. What is very important is the game state. I'll give you an easy example. If you're winning, then you do not need to create a lot of XG, okay? So if you are a team that spends a lot of time winning because maybe you were lucky to score a goal before, then you do not need to produce as much XG as your usual, let's say. Also in the game, we have to consider that for a bit, we didn't need to push to produce more XG. So it's just one game. The team is not complete. Players are still leaving and coming. We do need to wait a bit more to understand actually what Foster's plan is going to be. I have faith in the club. I have faith in the coach. So far, they took just good choices. We are in the championship because of our incredible board. So let's have faith. Again, you can always encounter a difficult match. But again, it's very important to understand that even in one match, there are multiple matches played and multiple approaches within the same match that can influence the outcome. So let's wait to have minutes and minutes of, Plymouth leading by one goal, or Plymouth trailing by one goal, or Plymouth drawing until the very last moment to understand what is how this team plays and what are his pros and cons of their philosophy. Say.
I feel like I need you to come and watch games with me to keep me calm, because that was some of the best advice I've had all season. Right, we touched on Azaz, so let's not go over too much. We realise he's an incredibly important player. Again, please go look at the graphs and output statistics that Alberto's put together. Are absolutely fantastic. Some absolute highlights that Azaz has managed to produce a quarter of the team's expected assists just by himself. So a huge part of what we've achieved this season is solely on his shoulders. Alberto, how unique is that to have a player produce that or carry that much output just what for one man?
Well, it's pretty unique, and then it's a problem when you don't have him anymore, because you were relying on his presence in the field. Azaz was the fifth most used player in the under Schumacher in the first half of the season. He was a fundamental player, but you could see that also last year when we were missing him, and when he was playing, he was we were much more of a threat. This year particularly, he's been outstanding, and that's basically the reason why he left. He's been recalled and then sent to Middlesbrough. He's not just first for expected assist in the team, contributing for basically one-fourth of our expected assist. He's also third for non-penalty expected goals behind the two monsters, the likes of Morgan Whittaker and Hardy, which of course is our main striker, and I'm expecting him to be the one providing the most non-penalty expected goals. I think that another important data to underline is the expected offensive value added, which is basically the net addition of expected assist and expected goals minus the expected assist received. So actually what he brought to the offensive phase, that is, again, the second highest in the team, 17%. It's a huge value for one singular player. And if we consider also the fact that he has been a constant threat for the opponent, he was the first for expected threat through passes. Expected threat is a measure of how more, let's say, threat you add to your team moving the ball from one place to the other. You can either do that via carry or via passes. In this case, he's been fundamental with his passes in the final third. And also, he was very good at providing advantages, both with through balls, so skipping one line of defense. Again, best of the team, even a little bit more than a quarter of our total through balls were created by him. He was also the third most successful dribbler in the team. So again, creating advantages, creating an area where you have more players than the opponent. That's fundamental. And I was honestly, he even if when you check all the other stats that he has, we have a couple of charts in there. In the piece I wrote with you, James, which I strongly suggested to check out. He was above average in every stats, and that's something you very rarely see. I was surprised that, I would have been surprised if he didn't attract interest. Unfortunately, in the contract, apparently he was allowed to be recalled, and I even understand Villa when they see they have an opportunity to sell. And to be honest, he's been sold for he's been basically stolen. I know he was out of contract soon, but that price nowadays in football, I mean, everybody could see his quality. He could have played easily in half of the... I'm watching a lot of Serie A, so I could have easily seen him playing in half of the team that we have here in the Serie A, starting regular. The two outstanding players this year have been him and Morgan. So, yeah, fundamental player. Very sorry for him that he has left. I was hoping that, actually, I thought that Kandel could kind of fit in and substitute him. Of course, not in the same way. Kandel was has the slightly different stats. Again, you can check them on the article we wrote. But I was confident because he already had previous championship experience, and despite not playing as much as Azazi, he was clearly a good player. Unfortunately, they took him away as well. So now it's really up to the manager. He might completely change the approach and try to have two players that are more maybe like a wing rather than offensive midfielders. We will see. Again, we need time. We need time to understand the strategy of the board in bringing in players. I have faith, so I am positive. To replace him, to find another Azaz this season with the budget we have, it's highly unlikely. I never say impossible because I'm into stats, but it's highly unlikely.
I think the frustrating part of losing Azaz was the trajectory that he seemed to be on in the final few games, final six games. He just seemed to be, his performance levels just seemed to be going up and up after a strong start to the season, just getting better and better. So I think it's a great time for Borough to buy, and don't think we even saw the peak of his powers. Replacing his output, statistically speaking, as Alberto points out, unlikely. Adam, what do you think's realistic? Do you think we can replace enough of it? And do you think there's enough scope in the team, the system, and the potential to perhaps share a bit of what he offered around a few more players in the squad?
I think it has to be, Andrea. That's almost, once you start dealing with the defensive issues that we covered, that's almost the most important task, is to see exactly how we're going to get some of that input and spread it across the team. You're not going to go out, well, let's put it another way. It's very, very unlikely you're going to go out in this market and you're going to find another Finisaz. I mean, for what we're going to spend, you may do, I guess. We know that our recruitment and our scouting network has delivered in the past. There may be some gems we can uncover. I certainly hope there is. I think it's possible that you could go out and find another Luke Kundal, in all honesty. I think that sort of input is something that, you know, it's a 21-year-old from Wolverhampton. Yes, he was a very good player, but I think there are going to be more of those out there that we could perhaps target. Again, I don't have any names off the top of my head, but I'd be very surprised, to be honest, if the club didn't. So bringing in one or two, and I'd like to see a couple of players in that attacking midfield role, who can at least carry some of the burden, is a priority. The other thing you do as well is, I think, as we've been saying, and I don't want to bore everyone and going over old ground, but sorting out the defence is key. And when you're doing that, the necessity actually to create so many chances across a game is reduced if you're not conceding the goal every 5 minutes. So I think that's the two-pronged approach I think you need to take. I think you definitely need new blood in, absolutely. And I think we can find players, certainly of Kundal's ability. I think it's very unlikely we find another Azaz. But if you've got two Kundals, then that may be something. But I think certainly pairing that with the way we play as a whole and getting that shored up, getting our defence more confident, and meaning ultimately that our chances mean more, because if you're scoring one goal and you're losing by four, it's not as bad. If you're scoring one goal and you're not shipping many, hello, we're looking interesting. So, yeah, I think everything kind of goes into one with that one. Everything that we do on the transfer front, on the training ground, is going to matter to replace what Azaz does. On the whole, it's not impossible. Getting another Finisaz, maybe, replacing what he does, not necessarily.
Yeah, I don't think you necessarily need a Finisaz if you're not playing the 4-1 sort of 4-1 that was being played, because basically he was the fulcrum of everything, and he was the fulcrum because he was able to do that. But you know, you had the back four, you had Houter, and then you sort of had Azaz in the middle with a another who would go up and down. You had the front three. You know, everything went through him almost by necessity, and he was that good at it that everyone gave it to him. It was a very simple way of playing almost. He was that kind of cheat code to use he had to work hard. It wasn't like he could just do things, but he was able to turn people. He was able to pick, you know, his pass, as Alberto has sort of enumerated, his passing, his assisting stats, his through balls, that skill to have that combination of that close control to be able to turn and beat a man and then be able to either carry if the space is there until someone's forced to come to you and you can play the pass, or to be able to turn and play the pass if you're, if the defense is pressed up against you. The sort of system fitted him. He fit the system. If you're not playing that system, you don't need a Finazaz. You can get in other players who have good attacking qualities that fit the system that's being played. And I very much sort of think that we won't be playing the sort of the Schumacher formation and style. I very much think we will have a back three. How it shapes up in front of it in transition and from game to game will probably vary depending on who we're playing, because, you know, even under Schumacher, we adapted, whether we were sort of zonal marking, man marking at times, et cetera, et cetera. And so I don't really think we need to find an Azaz. What we need to do is replicate his output by committee potentially. And that's actually doable. You know, if we're looking at replacing 25% of the team's expected assists, if we're looking at supplementing sort of, let's say, another 5 or 6, maybe 7 goals in the second half of the season, you can get that by, if you bring in 2 or 3, you know, 3 or 4 decent midfielders, you can aggregate that amongst the team. And even those who are here can be involved more in different ways. There are players here who aren't necessarily being used to their fullest potential. I'd say that at times Balimumba isn't being used to the fullest of his ability, and could be, you know, tactics and game plans could be formulated to accentuate what he does. He's very capable, you know, even though he's had, as what many people would describe as, a poor season, he's still very effective. If you look at the numbers for his carries, for his involvements in the top of the pitch, he does an awful lot of good work. So there's lots that can be done to replace his output within the style of the team. I don't think there's a need necessarily to go out and try and find a replacement, because, I mean, don't get me wrong, if Azaz was still here, Foster would definitely find a way to incorporate him into the team. He's that good. It wouldn't matter. He'd adapt his tactics. But if we don't need that role in the team, we can replicate that by committee, but aggregate that across a few good additions and maximising what we already have in the squad.
Okay. And finally, Alberto put together another graphic which shows Argyle's chances of staying up and what is called, it's called What Wins Relegation Battles. Again, go have a look at it. The key takeaway is that with the goals we concede, we would be an outlier if we stayed up. Obviously, we are also an outlier in attack, but if you take Luton out of the equation, no one close to the level of goals that we concede has ever stayed up in the Championship, which may sound a bit doomer, but is the way it is. So just quickly to finish off, should we go around the group and just, what are the key areas we need to strengthen? Let's just limit it to two key positions that you would really think that could change the numbers and ensure our survival this season. Should we start, Alberto?
A lot will depend on, again, Foster's tactics. It seems like we are going to play with three at the back now, or at least as long as Galloway can be consistent and if he can avoid injuries, because he's a great player. He's a bit fragile, we know that. So, if it was up to me, I can see us, now with Kessler Hayden leaving, I think we do need a replacement on the other. Even if we play 4 at the back, then we would need like a right back or a wing back if we play 3 at the back. But with all due respect, think that both Miller and Edwards can be good replacement at this level, but regular starters, let's say maybe they are a bit below average compared to the rest of the league. Mumba, I think, can flourish as a wing back rather than a wing. He didn't have a bad season. He just was adapting to a new role, more offensive role, which I don't think really fits him so far. So definitely right back or wing back. And then, well, it's probably going to be easier not to replace both Kandle and Azaz up there, but try maybe to work around with another tactic. So if I had to choose something, again, in the view of the lack of a plan B that we had before regarding crosses and headers and aerial threat in the opponent's area, I would look for maybe Sam Cosgrove similar player. I mean, someone that you can put up there and can play differently from Hardy, because we, I mean, it's going to happen that we're going to be trailing, that we're going to be down 1-0, 2-0 or whatever, and we'll have to recover goals. And like it or not, lots of teams, when they are in that situation, they try to rely on crossing game. And I'm not saying that we have to be great at crossing and great at heading, especially if we don't have the players, but at least to have a chance of having a plan B, even on set pieces, that could potentially give us some more threat, some more XG, some more offensive production. So if it was up to me, definitely a tall striker that can hold the ball, can pass the ball, and possibly can head the ball into the goal, and a wing back.
Adam, anything different or refreshingly left field?
Possibly not left field. I mean, it's going to be something that I don't, unless you're going out and suggesting two goalkeepers, I don't think there's much that we can say that we can't strengthen at some stage, simply because we've lost so many players. If you're going to put me down to the two that I feel are absolutely essential, then a right wing back or right back, however we want to play it, is completely obvious. Yeah, Kane Gazzaden needs to be replaced. And I guess with Juicenip's comments, yeah, we're pretty confident that's going to happen. And tactically or otherwise, whether we're going to use them in quite the same way as Azaz, I think I agree with the consensus there that we're probably not. But I'd still have at least one another attacking midfielder on the top of my list just to offer that option should we want to turn to it. And we've got a severe lack of depth in any case. So any sort of kind of attacking midfielder that we think would fit Foster's style, whatever that's going to be, I think is a huge priority.
Ben, I was going to just ask the same question to you in a different way. A lot of calls on social media for attacking options and striker options. It's been pretty unfortunate this season that both strikers in Bundu and Hardy seem to always get injured at the same time. Given that we've seen on paper how effective we are as an attacking team, would a striker be a use of your limited funds, or would you where else would you spend it that's not the obvious right back and attacking midfielder holes?
If you're going to get a striker, I mean, I think Bundu can do a wide range of roles. I think he's very fast. His first pace is brilliant. So his role potentially in a team which is trigger pressing could be really useful to you know, if I don't know how good he is at tackling, how good he is at jockeying your man, but if he's used to go and, you know, he's the first man to go and press the ball, he could actually have a role potentially in the centre of the midfield, someone who can carry the ball forward as a more attacking midfielder, rather than sort of like a winger slash striker. I think if you're going to get a striker, it needs to be someone like Alberto suggested, who's going to hold the ball up, because sometimes you need to, the Southampton game is a prime example. You can get rid of the ball and it just comes back at you. There's no point clearing the ball if you've got no retention. And there are times when, you know, I think Huddersfield was a prime example where we were getting rid of the ball and it was very often coming back at us. Well, we were trying to play low risk, and there's no point doing that if you haven't got people to hold the ball. So if you're going to get an attacker, it needs to be someone who's able to, you know, to bring the team up the pitch. We've got great output up front. I think between Whittaker, Hardy, Bundu, Mumba, you've got enough there, you know, and the other players who are more squad players that they can chip in here and there. I think you've got enough output. What you need is people to facilitate them. You know, that's what Azaz did brilliantly. So if you're asking me what would I think is necessary, if I had to choose between getting a new wing back and trusting Edwards there, I mean, I don't think he can last 90 minutes every game every week, but he's very clever. He knows how to push. He does it very well, actually, sort of when he's not called on to do it. Even under Schumacher, he'd go and press the man. He'd sort of spring out and sense his opportunity to go and press. So I think he could play in a high-pressing team quite well. Whether at 33 he can play 90 minutes every week in the championships, another matter. So I do think that is an area of... But I think an all-round midfielder, very much like JB, we're trying to stop balls into the box. We're trying to press high. We're trying to be able to occupy the middle of the pitch. We're trying to boss the middle of the park, really, with by stretching it with the wing backs and moving the ball around. You need an all-round midfielder, which Azaz was. You know, even his defensive stats, etc., were good. But that's where I would go, even maybe over an attacking midfielder. Get an all-round midfielder, someone who can defend, someone who can press, someone who's dynamic, someone who's a physical presence. As has been said, you couldn't argue against whoever we bring in, but I would love to see another all-round midfielder who can do a job defensively, who can go and press, who can put some dynamism in the midfield. Houghton's a very good facilitator from the first third to the second third, and Azaz was then the quarterback almost, and sort of the one everybody fed into. If you can put two players in the middle of the park who can do that, then you or at least have an alternative for someone to play next to Houghton, like JB did. I think having someone of that caliber, like an all-round midfielder, would be a great addition and would certainly feed into Fozzy ball as we know it, as we've sort of seen it from the England age group teams.
Perfect. Yeah, I think that pretty much backed up where I would have gone, which is someone in the perhaps the alternative in the Houghton role, really break up play and get us moving forward. And yeah, hopefully we'll be. I think we've got a big week of incomings coming in. So by the time Argyle Life reconvene, I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about on signings. So that's about it from us. Thank you, Alberto, especially for all the work you did putting that together. Please go read the piece and go and look at his graphs and his stats. And make sure you follow him. He on x.com, formerly known as Twitter. He is LAUCE44. Thank you if you made it through this, through all the way to now, for your time and your ears. Please subscribe also to One Team in Devon for more of this good stuff in your inbox every week. Goodbye and come on, you Greens.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.